Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, back on American soil, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. My triumphant return. I think I've reached a new state of enlightenment, and I also may or may not believe in aliens at this point. So it's been a pretty wild 2 weeks for me.
Wait, what happened?
So I basically went on like the AP World History tour of London and Paris, making sure to hit all of the things on the Magic School Bus ride that you would do.
That's fantastic.
If you were, you know, trying to check off the bucket list. But by far the best thing was sunrise at Stonehenge. Little known fact, you can get VIP at Stonehenge. So you can get right up next to the rocks and really have the whole experience. While I was there, the sun's rising, and then out of the corner of my eye, I start to see a lady dressed head to toe in purple. Then I start to hear the slow rhythmic beating of a drum, and it turns out she's a witch, and there's another witch, and they do like morning, some sort of solstice type performances on a regular basis. So I was unwittingly in the middle of a witch ceremony at Stonehenge at about 6:30 in the morning last week, and I'm definitely a different person.
Oh my God, wow.
I know, what a vacation, right? And then on top of that, do you know the story of Stonehenge at all?
I don't, and I was too embarrassed to ask. Where is Stonehenge?
It's like 2 hours outside of London to the southwest. It's like towards Wales, but it's like in the middle of absolute nowhere. And that's kind of the thing, because some of the rocks, these are huge rocks. Like there's no way, like you and me, we could have like 100 years to try to move it. We would not be able to move it unless we had like significant, you know, engineering capabilities.
That's what I hear. It's one of the 8 wonders of the world, right?
Exactly. And so it was supposedly like the official story was that it was built like 4,500 years ago, like 2,500 years BC. And like the rocks are only coming from a certain location that's like hundreds of miles away from where they've been stacked. And they're all like lined up specifically with the sun and the direction of the sun and so forth. So like the level of thought that these people had to have supposedly more than 4,000 years ago. And then they're trying to do this.
You sound skeptical.
Like,
I want the Golliver conspiracy theory.
No, there's just no way, Andrew. Like they're trying to say that it took hundreds and hundreds of years for this to like come together. So we're talking about multiple generations are going to devote their entire lives to moving these stones across like war-torn battlefields.
The
to,
flip
like,
side is,
arrange
though,
them.
At that time in history, there wasn't a whole lot else to do. But like, be like, hey, let's move these like 1,000-pound stones and see what we can do.
No, I feel you. Like they didn't have HDTVs, like the internet wasn't around. But just how do you move the rock? Like there's not really any evidence of how they did it. There's not like, you know, like just knocked down trees for like thousands of miles where they clearly like made a path to do it. These are huge stones. And like even if you had like 100 people trying to lift one, you wouldn't be able to do it. Like it just doesn't maneuver that way because they're not that big. You know what I mean? So they had to have like invented the wheel maybe, or they had to have like figured out a way to float it down a river or whatever. And I just don't believe it. And it just took a long time. So I'm just asking, like you read up on it and you tell me next week, do you think this is possible?
I mean, you completely lost me with the witch at 6:30 in the morning. I still have no idea what that was about.
That was a real
though.
Thing.
You could have documented her.
Well, I have pictures, so I can prove it. But there really was witches. And I'm not sure if that's a politically correct name for them, but that's how my guide described them to me. He was like, yeah, those are witches over there.
Wait, hold up. So were they like gypsies? Because gypsies
are real.
I think they're
like witches, like Wiccan or whatever I don't know. I'm ignorant. I just know that they were described as witches and they had this entire ceremony that they did at Stonehenge. And I think it was to honor the dead or honor their ancestors. And they hummed and they had a very slow beating drum. And honestly, like it felt like an out of body experience. It was like I was watching myself almost like virtual reality, experiencing my own life. It was
pretty
trippy, man. I got to say, yeah. And then I got back to the car and Ben Simmons was done for the year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, I figure if you're going to wake up at 6:30 in the morning, you deserve to have like an out of body experience for a tourist type thing. I don't think I could get up that early for anything that is not work related. But congratulations.
What I'm really hoping is that they're not witches at all. And they just do that to mess with the American tourists.
It's not a bad idea, actually.
But I'm just going to say, you do a little research, you look into the history of Stonehenge, and you tell me, could you move those rocks as far as they moved them, or did aliens just place them and we're just all pretending?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll look into it. We could discuss. This can be a running thing on the pod. I thought you were over there scouting for next year's top 100, so I'm proud of you for actually seeing some sights.
No, actually, this is the most I've ever detached from the NBA, basically since I started writing. So we're definitely going to have you play catch up here with me a little bit, just so I could figure out like what I missed over these last 2 weeks. It felt good to detach a little bit, but a lot happened. I mean, like, obviously, this is a pretty serious injury for a guy like Ben Simmons. I mean, what else did I miss?
Not that much happened. So you're good. You're good. But because like I was going through it this morning and I was like, you know, we could go through media day, but like there wasn't anything that crazy. I had a great time trailing March and Gortat and interviewing him at Wizards Media Day. You should check that out. But yeah, I mean, let's start with the Sixers. It's just the center of the basketball universe right now is the Philadelphia 76ers. Did you see any of Joel Embiid last night?
I couldn't watch it. It wasn't somehow on my television. I don't know what's going on with that. I guess it's the preseason. I saw his highlights.
Yeah, you didn't need to watch the game. You just the vines is all you need for the Embiid experience.
Okay, well, why don't you set us up on the optimistic side before I just rip them apart?
All right, fine. Optimistic, I have loved Joel Embiid since he was in college. As a freshman at Kansas, he just did everything. I compared him to young Hakeem, which is ridiculous to do with any young player, but he was that good. He was that agile. And like the thing that was crazy is he just got better every few weeks at Kansas. He'd pop up and you'd be like, wow, like look at him run the floor. He's got a hook shot now. And he kept improving. And so I was standing out for Embiid early. I remember getting into arguments with Grantland coworkers saying that he should be the number one pick. And
I hated people like you.
First of all, I was right. Like if he had been able to stay healthy, like the Cavs would have taken him. And like he was the best prospect there. So then he got hurt and before the draft. Just some of the stuff you were hearing about his past injuries and his bone density, and like things got very specific and weird before that draft. And I kind of had to let the dream go a little bit. But having said that, after the last 2 years, it was awesome to see him on the court last night. And like, you know, it's hard to tell what he's going to be able to do long term, but like, even seeing him out there, you just forget, like, he's so much bigger than almost anyone in the NBA. His body just sort of, like, unfolds on people. And I don't know. It was a cool moment after 2 years of just sort of uncomfortable waiting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
here you go with the reality check.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly where I start with him. I mean, number one, obviously, it's amazing that he's back on the court, right? And this was a similar thing for Oden like four times. I mean, the experiences that you're describing in terms of like rooting for him and just being glad he was able to do it and all of that, it's fantastic. So what was his minutes limit? I mean, he's playing what, like 46 seconds per night now? Or what are they giving him?
I don't know. I'll look up the box score.
I want to say they're giving him like 12 minutes a night to start and he wasn't supposed to play back-to-backs or something like this, but they're easing him along and you can understand why. I mean, his first shot was sort of, you know, he kind of goes into the post isolation. He kind of, you know, has a couple of moves. I'm not going to call them dream shakes. I'm not going to go where you went once. And he kind of like throws up a crazy, you know, turnaround that goes in through the middle of the paint. And the thing I'm thinking there the whole time is you can have that shot anytime you want. Just take it. You know, if I'm the defense, whatever. If you force a guy into that shot, what's that? The turnaround from the post, like his first basket where he's like working one-on-one. He's got like three moves. He gets to his drop step. It's kind of herky-jerky and he puts it in like kind of fading away. So you can have that shot, man. You're not going to beat a team with that if that's your move. You know, the 3-point range definitely was the most interesting thing. I mean, a foot was on the line there, but he looked pretty smooth stroking that. That's a nice thing from a pick and pop standpoint. It makes it easier to use him with a guy like Nerlens Noel.
Yeah.
So that could be something where, you know, that's a real nice development that I definitely was not expecting from him. I just didn't necessarily see the lift or the athleticism. You know, he had the block on Jaylen Brown. It wasn't like he skied off the ground for it. I mean, he just kind of reached for it. So I don't know. I mean, there was sort of like Odin post-surgery vibes all over the place for me, where he wasn't that same graceful, like smooth moving type of guy. He's thinking about his emotions and movements. And I don't know, when I'm watching him, I'm just waiting for the next thing to go wrong, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say that's definitely where I am. I'm definitely not triumphant after last night. It's going to take like 3 or 4 months of injury free, like real productive basketball before I'm able to like exhale watching Joel Embiid. And confession, I mean, I was at a different basketball game last night, so I couldn't watch it, but I didn't really like study the numbers. I was basically going off of Twitter as I watched the Wizards Heat preseason game, and holy shit, Joel Embiid only played 13 minutes and scored 6 points, and people last night were acting like he was like a future MVP. So yeah, maybe we should all slow down now that I look at the box score here.
And like, this is going to come off really cynical, but when you mentioned like 3-4 months with him, like to me, it's 2 straight years. Like, that's what I want to see from him before I'm actually going to buy into it. And that's just like Odin post-traumatic stress disorder for me. You know, I understand that. But when you have a guy who's coming in and out of the lineup that many times, when, you know, his body is so big and he's putting so much stress on his lower limbs, and you're asking him to play, you know, potentially once he works into it, like you want him to play starter minutes. I mean, you want him to try to reach that all-star potential that some people saw when he was coming out of college. So you're going to be putting a big load on him, and you want him to get up and down the court. You want him to work in isolation. You want him to be able to, you know, get off the ground for offensive rebounds, you know, the quick jumping, all that stuff. I want to see it for 2 straight years before I buy into it, you know, and before I believe he's really past these injuries. So I know that makes me like uber skeptical, uber cynical. Like, you know, and I'm not trying to take anything away. I mean, it takes a lot of, you know, mental fortitude to even get back to where he is right now. More power to him. But I certainly was not blown away.
Where do you stand on Joel, the internet personality?
I kind of tune him out. I mean, it was funny, but, you know, there's a lot of funny people on the internet who don't play basketball. You know, there's funnier people than Joel Embiid. So, like, if he wants to become an all-star and he could be the funniest all-star, then I'm going to give him credit for his humor. At this point, he's just another Twitter comedian. You know, it's like, there's a lot of debate jokes going around or whatever. You know, there's a lot of material on there.
I've never really, like, again, I went to see him at Kansas. I've loved him since then, but I've never really gotten the whole, like, internet phenomenon side of him. It's kind of like, I feel the same way about Embiid as I do, like, Harambe Twitter. Like, it's not that I'm not against it, but I just don't really get it. I don't get the appeal. So Embiid is kind of like a human Harambe joke to me. As far as his like internet presence goes, but I hope he does well, because I think at this point all the like process bickering back and forth is kind of over, and I was definitely part of a lot of that, but now I it would be awesome if he were like a long term piece, even if they can only use him for 25-30 minutes a night. Like, it would be a solid addition to the league. I don't see, like, there have been a lot of comparisons between him and Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis. And that, to me, like, that stuff just has to stop, like, because it's only going to be unfair. And like, I just don't see him being able to hold up the way those guys have. And even Anthony Davis hasn't been healthy, but like, I his ceiling is not that.
Yeah, and I mean, if they're going to limit his minutes, he's not going to even have a chance this season to show it. So it's completely unfair. You know, I mean, if you're going to be very careful with how you use them, and, you know, a guy like Towns was playing big minutes as a rookie and he made it through pretty much unscathed. I mean, that's an apples to oranges comparison, and it's just not fair to Embiid. So let's check back in on that in like a year or so. Hey, I have a question for you though, because you were mentioning the Sixers fans' reaction to that game. How did the Simmons injury play out in real time? Like, what was the instant reaction, or what was the second wave of reaction? I mean, how did that come down? I just, from a panic standpoint, I'm wondering how it badly was that taken.
Yeah, there was definitely sort of like a 12-hour period of internet mourning across basketball Twitter. And I mean, because Sixers fans, as insane as they are, like, everybody was pretty happy to see them kind of turn the corner this year. And like, to have Simmons go down, I mean, all the other injuries were kind of expected, but then to have Simmons go down was like particularly cruel. That sort of twisted the knife. But I like, for me, I kind of, after about 12 or 24 hours, I started to think about it a little differently. And I don't think it's that bad for the Sixers.
So that's why I asked, because I came in on the silver lining side of it. So I must have missed that first wave. And I was just sitting there thinking, why is the discussion evolved to this point? This is like one of the worst possible things that could happen to the Sixers after what they've been through. And no matter how much you want to spin it, I mean, okay, so maybe he's not out completely for the entire season, right? But they pretty much took an inactive approach this summer because they wanted to like let things just naturally build up and put the ball in Simmons's hand and kind of see how it would work. And you need that evaluation time. And also, when you look at the question marks that were facing him coming out of college, it was all about like, oh, is he going to be able to kind of flip the switch now that he cares in the pros, right? Well, like, I wanted to start getting an answer to that immediately. And I'm sure the Sixers did too, as they're trying to kind of build around him and understanding what his ceiling might be. And so to lose that potentially for, you know, 2-3 months or, you know, even longer, you know, it turns it into another lost season. I mean, obviously, the more draft picks you can kind of stack up and the better those picks are, that's going to kind of help them, you know, to a certain degree. But, you know, to me, I'd rather, way rather have a healthy Ben Simmons for, you know, 75 or 82 games and have him chasing the Rookie of the Year award and kind of getting people excited than the alternative where you're trying to kind of lick your wounds and make yourself feel better about it.
Yeah, and there's definitely, I mean, so I wrote that there were silver linings in with this injury. And I should preface this by saying I would be freaked out if I were a Sixers fan, because like a foot injury right off the bat is scary. There were other red flags with Simmons and some of his people and like who were controlling his workouts this summer. Like, I don't understand why he's trying to turn into LeBron, especially if he's trying to play point guard, just in terms of like some of the weight that he's added. However, you were more in on Simmons than I was as a prospect. And, I just look at it like he has some real holes in his game, and you're going to need to build a roster carefully to sort of capitalize on everything that he does well. And the roster that the Sixers have is not that roster. Like, almost nobody on the team can shoot this year. And he was having Simmons start would have meant playing Dario Saric out of position at the three. It would have meant Les Covington, who's one of the only guys who is like a half decent shooter on some nights. And it was a tough spot to put him in, especially as a rookie who, like, fair or not, people are looking at him as sort of like the savior in Philly. I really think like taking him out for the year and letting him rehab this foot while like Colangelo gets to sort through the rest of the mess on this roster is like not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would play very cautiously with him. I mean, if it does come to a situation where it's like, do you try to bring him back for after the All-Star break? Or do you just kind of let him sit? I think I'd be in the let him sit.
Yeah, like, who cares?
For sure, because there's no ceiling for them on this team, you know, this season. I mean, I just don't know what there is to sort through. These guys can't play. I mean, who can play on this team?
I disagree, though. So I think I think you take Simmons out of the lineup and they actually are not any worse, because then you move Saric to the four. You throw.
This season's not about this season, though, right? It's about the next five seasons. And so,
yeah, which
they may
and
not
I understand.
Change in the standings this year, but you want him and you want to be able to see everything that he can do so you can plan and build around him.
Yeah, but I also think that this year's Sixers are not going to be unwatchable the way the last like three or four iterations were, because Saric will be fun as a four. Covington is a pretty solid three and can play some four, and they'll be sort of interchangeable on the wing. Like, a lot of it will depend on how much they can get from Embiid, but in the backcourt, Sergio Rodriguez and Jared Bayless are upgrades. It's amazing that Jared Bayless and Sergio Rodriguez are the best guards that Philly has had for like 4 years, for an entire presidential term. But they really are like much better than anyone that the Sixers have had. And like it's gonna be better than people might have, like when Simmons went down, people were freaking out. But like, I don't think he really changes much. And in fact, like having him having to force him onto the court for 30, 35 minutes a night would have like screwed with spacing, and it would have been tough for them.
Well, you're very charitable. I mean, I these are guys that aren't good. You know, they're not impact guys. Any of the
come
guys
on,
you
you're not
out.
In on Jared Bayless.
No, I mean, I was actually there was Blazers Edge, the website I used to run, that actually made T-shirts, Team Bayless T-shirts, when they drafted him, because you know that was the. That year, they were kind of brainwashed by Kevin Pritchard into believing that Bayless was going to be a better long-term prospect than a guy like Westbrook, who went earlier in that lottery. And needless to say, it didn't work out that way. No, I mean, they're fine. Like you said, they're upgrading over the worst players in NBA league history from the last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
So yes, they're better, but come on. Like, let's have a little bit of perspective here. I mean, this team's going absolutely nowhere. Their number one reason to watch them's out. The number two reason to watch them is limited to 13 minutes a night, and everybody's throwing a party because he scores 6 points. I mean, we need to have a little bit of perspective here and realize that the counter narrative of, they're going to be able to kind of get by just fine without him, and their wins and losses aren't going to be changed that much, while true, kind of misses the point, right? I mean, this was the year where they were finally going to have a real direction, and now they're back to no direction.
No. I think the direction is to basically play this year out with a sneaky, solid, like, core. I mean, still going to lose 60 games. But,
very sneaky. Very, very sneaky. Like,
really, really
camouflage sneaky.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But I think the long-term plan is to then, like, the goal should be to surround Simmons with shooting. And I don't know, like, Colangelo's hands are tied a little bit because he doesn't want to be seen. And I talked to, in the article I wrote, like, I talked to somebody from another team who was basically like, yeah, like, you don't want to be seen coming in and just giving away all these assets that Hinkie tanked for and sacrificed 3 years for. But like, eventually you got to get rid of guys and get people on the team who can actually shoot, because that's what Simmons is going to need. Like, and right now, like, throwing him in onto this roster would have been pretty rough for everybody.
Yeah, that's where I kind of disagree, because I actually think that, first of all, I think he would have been really good, and he would have been must-see TV, you know, and that's better than anything they've had in a long time. And sure, there's gigantic holes in his game. We know what those were, but you were in Vegas with me. You were legitimately excited to watch Ben Simmons play, right? I mean, every time he took the court, it was like, what's this guy going to do? That's how I felt.
Kind of, but I was also a little bit confused by some of the hype, because like, even in Vegas, guys were hanging 5 feet off him and he wouldn't shoot. So like, the only way to solve that is to at least surround him with guys who can score.
Are you buying into this idea that he's going to use his time off to like redevelop his jump shot, like Derrick Rose when he had his first knee injury? Remember those stories?
Not really. It's always a little dicey.
That's one of my favorite, least favorite, ideas. Like, oh yeah, massive injury for a star player who can't shoot. He's gonna come back, he's gonna be a 40% knockdown guy. Right.
Yeah, we'll sure see. I think if you're the Sixers, you have to plan on him not ever being able to shoot, but being so good at everything else that it doesn't matter, and you just play him with four shooters and then you're fine. But they may have two lottery picks, depending on what happens with the Lakers. Like, the future is like generally bright. But next question here regarding the Sixers, and we've already spent 20 minutes on the Sixers, which is amazing. But I think
we're not going to talk about them again after February. So, I mean, we might as well.
The main thing is, I want, like, they need to get rid of Nerlens and Okafor and just start fresh building around Simmons and Saric and potentially Embiid. But they also, like, this year will be a good test for them to see what exactly they have with Embiid, because, like, I don't know if you want to pencil him in as, like, the big man of the future if he's only going to be able to play 20, 25 minutes a night. So they'll see. But, like, what do you do with Nerlens and Okafor?
Yeah, Embiid's the big man of the future on Tuesdays and Fridays, right? Like, the other day, he's got to sit out. I gotta chill. I am actually really excited for him. People are going to say, oh, you're being a jerk. And, like, you know, I just think we need to kind of keep his progress in perspective and don't overhype him and don't put more pressure on him that's necessary, because it's going to be a long road for him. In terms of Noel, like I was saying, you know, if Embiid can stretch, you know, if that's an actual part of his game, all of a sudden, I think you can actually play him with Noel, and I'm okay with it. I mean, I've always liked Noel. I've always trusted him the most of those three bigs that they have. I mean, the guy, you know, Okafor, to me, I would just move on from. I mean, I'm not going to call him an amnesty candidate because he's on a rookie contract, but, you know.
Joe Alexander part 2.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what he does. And what you're describing in terms of, like, the ideal lineup around Ben Simmons, like, how do you fit Okafor into that? Like, how does that work?
Yeah,
and I don't think he's good enough. I think he's nice player offensively. I don't think he's good enough to be, you know, a linchpin of a good offense. To me, he's kind of in that role that's kind of developing now with guys like Kanter, where you're hoping he can be, you know, a lead scoring option off the bench where he can really punish other teams' backup big men. I mean, that's kind of the role that I would see for him kind of thriving in the most.
Yeah.
And that's not a very valuable player. So he would not be a major part of my roster building plans if I was Philadelphia, nor would I expect them to be able to get much for him. I wouldn't move on from Noel yet, especially as we see how Embiid unfolds, just because if he goes down in November, you're going to need somebody to play those minutes. So I'm still kind of in wait and see approach with them, but I would trade Okafor for any reasonable asset
for anything
immediately.
You can get. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's strange. Okafor, I don't know why he's still on the team. Again, I talked to somebody with another team who said that they basically there's just, like, political pressure. And Okafor, I mean, he was a top 5 pick. You can't necessarily trade him for someone who, like, you want to try and get equal value or, like, close to equal value. But, I mean, I would trade Okafor to Phoenix and say, look, just give us any shooter. Like, if you won't give us Bledsoe, give us Brandon Knight. If you won't give us Brandon Knight, we'll take TJ Warren. Like, any sort of perimeter help, because there just aren't many teams who are even in the market for what Okafor does well. Nerlens is a trickier case, though, because, like, he's going to want a lot of money next summer. And, like, just the posture of the Sixers, like, it seems like they've been trying to get him out of there all summer. And you would think that there'd be more of a market for some, because, like, he's kind of everything you would want in, like, a modern five. Just, like, he's solid in the pick and roll. He can make a play. He's great defensively. And, like, he can stay out of the way and doesn't need a lot of touches to be effective. But, like, I just don't know where you trade him.
I don't want to hear anything about salaries when it comes to Philadelphia. I mean, their payroll has been like $7 for the last like 6 years in a row. So
that's
if
a
you
great
have to pay
point.
Nerlens Noel, you have to pay Nerlens Noel. If you have to pay this guy, you have to pay this guy. I mean, those guys coming off rookie deals are going to be able to get their money from them if they want to. There's going to be room for them. And they kind of owe it to the fan base to show their financial commitment. I mean, these guys have been pissing away seasons for years, saving money, doing it this cheap backwards way. We all understand what the strategy is behind it, but you can't start to get cheap now that you have to pay these guys, even though you wasted half their careers tanking. I mean, if these guys are real players, you have to pay them, and you don't get to kind of like be nervous about it. You just have to do it. And
yeah,
and also you honestly owe Nerlens Noel for wasting his career. You know,
I mean, do guys feel like bad that, for he's the one guy who like they've legitimately, I mean, we'll see next summer, but there's a chance that the Sixers have cost him like $30 or $40 million.
I mean, they honestly owe him an extra $10 million just for not demanding a trade as soon as he got there and every day after that, because he was fully within his right to do that. I mean, he played ball for them, and a lot of guys on their roster have played ball for them when they didn't need to. I mean, they were not pursuing anything resembling a professional direction for a long time there, and most people kind of kept their head down. I mean, remember Okafor just like dropping that jersey in disgust after he got drafted? I mean, that's how I probably would have been for my entire tenure if I got drafted by them. Going back to your trade proposals, though, real quick, you know, if I'm Phoenix, you know, I'm good. I'll keep Brandon Knight as my sixth man. I'm not even going to trade you, you know, like maybe you can have Archie Goodwin, you know?
No, man, come on, man. TJ Warren, somebody needs a trade for TJ Warren. He's buried in Phoenix and he's really good. Like, I love that dude. And I would like to see him in Philadelphia with getting some open looks from Ben Simmons over the next few years. But just don't knock my dreams. The Nerlens thing, I think there's got to be stuff that the Sixers know about that we don't know about, because otherwise I just don't understand why you would want to trade him, especially with the Embiid uncertainty. Like, he's solid and they're not going to get equal value because most teams are just set up front. Like, the Wizards just gave $60 million to Ian Mahinmi. Like, otherwise they could have used Nerlens. The Hawks could have used Nerlens, but they just gave Dwight Howard, I don't know, like, what was it, $70 million? Like, they're set. Like, I just feel like most of the teams around the league, the only place I could see him is Dallas.
Here's why Nerlens is in the trade talks. It's just like if you go to a used car dealership, right? Like, they clean up and have the nice Mustang out front. It's been washed. It's been waxed. Like, they get you in the door with a, you know, kind of talking about a player that you actually want. And then you get in there and then, you know, it's way overpriced. You're like, oh, man, I'm about to leave. And they're like, hold on. We've got a Pinto with Jahlil Okafor's name on it in the back. It's a good discounted price. You're really going to like this. You know, definitely, you're already here. Might as well take it for a test drive. And they're just kind of like praying that they can use Noel's intrigue to kind of like offload a guy like Okafor.
Yeah, okay, fair. That's a good theory. We'll see how it plays out. The one thing, is now that Simmons is out, there's less pressure to make any move. Like, they can play this out and use the Simmons injury as an excuse for like just a snake bitten season, and Colangelo can take his time. So it'll be interesting to see. Do you see either one of those guys in Boston?
I mean, that seems to be like the hot place, but then they got a really, really good player this summer in Horford. I look at Boston's front court rotation, I'm not really seeing a lot of holes. Are you?
That's kind of my thing. Like, in June, I couldn't figure out why Danny Ainge wouldn't try to steal one of them. But now, if you've got Horford and Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk, like, that's a lot of big guys, and they probably don't want to play two big guys very often. So I wouldn't really get it if they were like going big on Nerlens Noel.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, I don't think he really brings a lot to what they need. I mean, Horford is such a superior player in basically all aspects, and he kind of fell into their lap. So I think that they're good.
So moving on here, more injury news. Reggie Jackson out kind of indefinitely. A little bit of a concerning report today from Mark Stein, saying that he has tendonitis in his knee. And I think Stein also said that Reggie Jackson told him that he's had the tendonitis in his knee for years, which is kind of scary. Do you think that changes things for the Pistons?
Well, I saw one report. I'm not going to be able to cite it offhand, but I'm hearing that, like, could miss 2 months. I mean, I don't know if you saw that.
Right.
If that's true, yeah, that's going to change their whole season. I mean, I think that they were so dependent on their starters last year. Their starters had such unbelievable health. And then Stan Van ran all his starters, not into the ground, but he ran them, you know, 30 plus minutes, all of them regularly. And then outside of that top five unit that they were kind of, you know, putting out there, I mean, their bench was terrible last year. I think they probably made some improvements to their bench this summer in terms of filling out their depth a little bit. But yeah, I mean, him and Drummond were both irreplaceable pieces if they wanted to get back or even build on what they did last year. So to me, know, that's the kind of move that could take them out of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's weird. I talked to somebody with the around the league, and they were saying, because for the mag, did you do your scout interview yet?
Of course. Yeah, no, I got a lot of hot takes if we want to go through some of those, but yeah.
Yeah, so for Sports Illustrated's Preview magazine, both Golliver and I and Rob Mahoney had to talk to scouts just about I think we each had 10 teams or 12 teams or something. And the guy I talked to was pretty high on the Pistons in terms of what they can do this year. And, you know, everybody's young. They should get better with another year of Stan Van Gundy. But I've always been skeptical of Reggie Jackson. And obviously the injury complicates things. But the other question, like, I'm not sure. I feel like Drummond is a little bit overrated at this point in his career. Like, he had an awesome 6 weeks to open the season last year and then just kind of tailed off. And nobody really noticed the second part. And we were all just sort of like, Andre Drummond's, like, the next big thing. And I don't know how much you can count on him either.
I mean, I think you can count on him. He's pretty solid in terms of what he does well. It's just he doesn't do that many things that well. But in terms of, like, you know, volume offensive rebound and kind of controlling the paint, being the backline guy for, you know, a pretty good defense, I think he proved he can do all of those things last year. You know, when I look at their question marks, you know, it doesn't really start with him. I mean, I think it starts with their second unit. It starts with some of their younger wings who they're trying to bring along and maybe turn into true, like, two-way guys or 3-and-D type guys. But, I mean, the whole show really was Reggie Jackson. I mean, he had the ball in his hands a ton. He led the league or was very close to league leaders when it came to drives towards the basket. He's creating a huge percentage of their offense. And the whole kind of show was constructed around having the ball in his hands, even though, you know, he's sort of a middling starting point guard. If you take him off, the drop-off is going to be very, very significant, severe there.
Yeah, man, it's tough. Like, no Reggie will make it tricky for them this year for the first few months anyways. I mean, their wings actually got a lot better. Like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Stanley Johnson started to come on toward the end of the year, and that's why, like, I was pretty excited to watch them this year. Their backup point guard is Ish Smith, and he could be fun. I mean, like, I kind of trust Stan Van Gundy to make any guard look like 75% better than he actually is. And so he could be pretty solid, but I still go back to Drummond. Like, I feel like would you rather have Andre Drummond or DeAndre Jordan?
Oh, DeAndre Jordan, that's not close. I mean,
right.
Come on.
And DeAndre Jordan is, like, I mean, he's sort of a borderline all-star. Like, we talk about the Pistons as if Drummond is sort of like Dwight Howard, but he's really, it's, as far as the pecking order goes, he's not that high up the list.
Well, as you know from reading and digesting SI's top 100 of 2017, DeAndre Jordan was 20. Andre Drummond was 29. That's a, you know, that's a size.
I know. And I complained about that, and I've changed my mind over the last couple of weeks. The more
It's okay. Like, I don't need to hear the words "you were right." Like, I could just sense them from you. So it's fine.
Look, man, I ordered my Derek Favors jersey. We're straight.
Yes. So going back to your Ish Smith point, that's actually, you know, that's a good point. You know, Stan Van has the ability to kind of coax magic out of these guys. And I think that was a pretty smart, targeted addition by him. I mean, imagine if they were in a situation where it was like Brandon Jennings or Steve Blake. You know, yeah, good luck. Two months with those guys.
It's a little rough.
Yeah, that would have been really rough. But, you know, I think a big part of their success was just the continuity factor last year. I mean, you have those guys play together huge minutes, and you can bring in a guy like Tobias Harris midseason and just kind of make it work on the fly because everybody else is, you know, playing so well. And when I look at Reggie Jackson, I mean, clearly there's not star talent, right? But he was in a star-sized role last year. And so one way or another, somebody else is going to kind of have to pick it up. And when you look at Drummond, you're right. I mean, he's not a star go-to type center where you're going to force feed him. I mean, he's definitely not DeMarcus Cousins. So, you know, he's not even like a Karl Anthony Towns. So how much offensive slack can he really pick up? How much more offense are you going to run through him when his toolbox is so limited? You know, guys like Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, like, they could probably give you a little bit more in the short term, but at some point their efficiency is probably going to come off because know, guys like, you know, Reggie Jackson's not there to kind of set them up and run the offense quite as well. And then a guy like Caldwell Pope, I mean, almost all of his offense is derivative, right? So you take away the guy who's sort of playmaking and creating for him, and now you're asking him to do a little bit more. I mean, that's probably not going to work out great either. So I think there's just going to be like secondary repercussions from not having a Reggie Jackson. And I think that they deserve credit for taking a big step forward last year, but they really got lucky with their health. And it was something that I had mentioned in my midseason grades with them. And I mentioned in their sort of end of season grades too, was like, this is a team you have to kind of watch for regression, because, you know, their starters were able to hold up so well, and here they go right out of the gate, you know, kind of in position to fall back.
Yeah. Can I tell you my dream for the Pistons? It's not rooted in very much reality, but
that's fine. Like, I believe in aliens now. So in reality, we're
yeah, that's true. I need more details on the aliens after the pod. So here's the thing. I am not that high on the Wizards this year. And uh-oh. I'm likewise not that high on the Pistons. Long term, I still have faith in the Wizards, but if they bottomed out this year, it would not be the worst thing in the world. So in my perfect NBA universe, I would lend John Wall to the Pistons for 1 year and let him play in that wide open system with Stan Van, run pick and rolls and just murder teams with Andre Drummond, and then kicking to some of the shooters they have, and let him just go wild in that system. And then a year from now, he could come back to Washington. We'd have an extra lottery pick who theoretically could be traded for another star, and everything would be great. That's my NBA fantasy.
Yeah, usually when people want to steal the soccer rules, it's like we should have relegation and promotion between the different leagues. No. But what you're basically saying is there should be loans, right? Like
exactly.
They should just be able to loan
John Wall to the Pistons for the good of the entire league.
I mean, it sounded pretty great. Like, I mean, it's impossible, but it was an awesome idea.
Like, I just once someone needs to put John Wall in a wide open system with a big man who's excellent on pick and rolls, and just surround him with shooters and let him go nuts, because like he's really good. He's a top 15 player, and people are forgetting it. And I'm worried, like I'm beginning to freak out that John Wall's prime is going to happen without him ever finding the right teammates. And it's stressing me out.
Well, I think the good thing is you've got a coach who wears glasses now. So, I mean, I think
look, Scott Brooks is straight up the nicest dude in the world. And I'm not here to hate on Scott Brooks yet. I'm going to give him at least a few months before I like turn full hater on him. But I don't
see why any reason why the Wizards can't be that team you were sort of describing the Pistons would become this season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it? Beal staying healthy? I mean, what's the hang up?
I think the main thing is Beal staying healthy. Otto, like they could actually be really good. We'll talk about it more when we do previews next week. There's a version of the team that does really well. I just feel like if you put Wall with Drummond, that is Drummond and Stan. Like that's a safer bet than what the Wizards like. The season could go a lot of different directions this year.
I agree, but I think that they could be pretty good, and I think it's starting to open up a little bit. I mean, you take a team like Detroit out of the mix, you know, for Washington.
Yeah, man. Hey, look, I believe. I'm ready to believe. All right, moving on. Let's check in with the champs. So, when do you think J.R. Smith will play for the Cavs this year?
I don't think I want to say opening night, just to kind of like come out and have a hard, you know, nice hard take on it. I'm going to say opening night. I think they're going to get it done. I think it's politics as usual.
Yeah. How do you feel about Rich Paul? He's currently, if you believe rumors, he's already declared that Ben Simmons is not playing this year, which I don't think he's said that in like a hard, fast kind of way, but like I would bet against Ben Simmons playing this year based on his representation and because it's probably the best thing. But like Rich Paul is very good at holding teams hostage, and he's especially good at doing it to the Cavs. How do you feel about him in general?
I think holdouts are great. I think we need more holdouts. Nothing gets people excited like holdouts. No, I think if you're the Cavaliers, I mean, I can see it from both sides, right? I mean, J.R. Smith, like, this is clearly the time to get paid. Like, you want your just due for, big time contributions as a starter two-way guy on a championship team. Everybody else in that organization's gotten paid out of this world. And there's a real understanding, I think, among all parties that, like, he's the most valuable to the Cavaliers he's going to be compared to any other team in the league, right? So they need to kind of take care of him. And, you know, LeBron, you know, kind of coaxed good JR out of him for a couple of years. So from that standpoint, I feel like there is a compromise waiting to be made. I'm sure there's not a gigantic gap in terms of the dollars. I think JR likes being there enough where it's not like he's going to go in there with some completely ludicrous self-assessment on what he should be worth. And there's no real reason to rush into it. Like, you know, it's unusual. It doesn't, you know, often happen where these guys take this long. It's kind of strange that it's happened 2 years in a row in Cleveland. And it's not even really that strange because it's clearly part of their strategy.
Yeah.
But what's the hurry? Like, what does it matter if he misses the first month of the season? Does that affect Cleveland at all? I mean, to me, it doesn't. Like, we saw last year, like, the Tristan Thompson holdout was supposed to screw everything up, right? Well, it screwed it up so badly that they won the title, and it was the greatest moment in the city's history. So I don't really see a downside to it. Just go with it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy the way Rich Paul does business, because he did this with Eric Bledsoe, too. And what's, like, he'll hold out so long that, like, he kind of loses a lot of leverage, and yet it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, because, like, JR, at this point, there aren't many teams around the league who could pay him. I mean, he could go sign with the Sixers for $20 million, but there's not a whole lot of competition. There's, like, three or four teams that have cap space to add him, and yet it probably won't matter. And
I don't think it matters at all because they can't win a title without him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't he indispensable to their title hopes? How do they replace him?
Yeah, no, that's certainly, like, LeBron's argument,
LeBron, I think that's a reality. So that's why I don't really think he's changed his leverage that much.
And when LeBron said that about Tristan Thompson, like, he was right. Like, Tristan Thompson earned every penny of the $80 million or whatever he signed for in the finals. Like, he was all over the place against the Warriors, and honestly is twice as valuable specifically because of what he can do with the Warriors. So
100%. I think that they handled that perfectly last year, and I was kind of on board with the way they did it then. I think that Tristan Thompson is a more indispensable piece than J.R. Smith, because at least you have a guy like Shumpert who can kind of be a facsimile version of a little bit of what he does. So if somehow they were never able to, you know, reach an agreement, you could kind of move forward and maybe you could try to, like, plug and play some guy, try to coax Ray Allen out of retirement or, you know, come up with something at the deadline. To kind of replace a J.R. Smith. But no, they need him, and they understand that the Cavaliers need him, and so I think it's going to get done.
Yeah, and I kind of enjoy that. I enjoy this annual tradition now of torturing Dan Gilbert, I hope we keep it going, you know? Who knows who Rich Paul can sign next from the Cavs?
Clearly, Delly needed to get in on this.
Delly really lost out, man. He's living in Milwaukee now. That's tough. So let's finish out here. We're like three or four days into the preseason. Give me three hot takes from the roughly 15 minutes of basketball. We can alternate. I have some takes too.
I've got a scorching hot take that, again, is not really based in reality, but I think you might enjoy.
Let's do it.
I think we're at the point where we need a mercy rule. I don't know if you watched the Warriors and Clippers last night.
Man, that's one of my first takes.
That was like watching one of those twisted little, like, fourth graders just, like, pick apart a dead animal on the side of the road. I mean, it wasn't good for anyone.
Were you watching on TV?
I was, yeah. I had it on ESPN. Somehow they decided to put Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on and not Joel Embiid. I don't know why ESPN would have done that, but
So I saw that game, and I was watching highlights in bed. And it was my first take is that basically I saw the highlights and was like, I don't think I'm going to care about the Warriors this year, at least until the playoffs. Like all summer long, my response to people, like when I'm making small talk or whatever about what happened with the Warriors, like I always kind of just throw in the token, like, well, like whatever you think, like it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be crazy to watch. But like, I just don't really care. Like they're so good and it fits so well that, yeah, they're just going to dominate people. And like seeing what they did to the Clippers, it just didn't really like register. There's so many other teams that I'm more interested in watching this year.
That is a really, really early checkout. I mean, it's October 5th. that's like if you had like a flight at like 3 a.m. So you checked out of your hotel at like 12:30 a.m. when they like reset the billing cycle at midnight. So you got like a full 30 minutes in your hotel room. That's like what you just did right there. You completely checked out on history. Well, that's cool. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I don't think I'm going to be able to turn away. Or maybe that's just proximity issue, you know, being in California.
Yeah.
And probably going up to see them in person, you know, a few times and all that. I mean, it wasn't super compelling game. They looked unbelievable. But yeah, it was tough to watch. And that's kind of what I was thinking with the mercy rule. So here's my idea for like first draft mercy rule. You tell me what you think. If you get to 100 and you have more than double your opponent's score, so like it's 100-48, the game's immediately over.
Yeah, that's fair. But then the losing team should have to sacrifice something. Like the Clippers should have to cut Austin Rivers or something.
Like take a second loss in the standings.
Yeah.
I just think anytime the game is like 100-40, 100-38, it's just too much. Like it's just a massacre. We
First
have to
all,
save
I,
the
I
viewing
think this
public.
Would only happen with the Warriors. Like I don't see anyone else in the league doing that.
And it could happen like 45 times. That's what I'm saying. Like, let's just save everybody the anxiety and just end these games halfway through the third quarter.
Yeah, fair enough. And I do think the Warriors will start to get more interesting against it. Like once they're in the playoffs and we're seeing like better teams against them, they will be pretty interesting. But right. And it'll be interesting to see how it fits together and how guys stay in rhythm. But for now, man, I think I'm set. The mercy rule, that says it all right there. If we need a mercy rule, like, nah, I'm not staying up until 1 a.m. to watch that.
Yeah, you checked out of your hotel at 12:30 and I proposed a mercy rule. And I'm kind of kidding, but honestly, not really. And like, it would almost, maybe it's just a mercy rule from our readers. Like anything that happens after the fact that they're up 100-40, they can just give us a pass. Like they can just let it, like they can just agree to let us
good.
Go to bed. Yeah.
All right. So I have another take. After sitting, I went to Wizards Heat last night, and it's for a story I'm doing for later this month. But I think it was the first preseason game I've ever seen. There were about 2,000 people there in a 20,000 person stadium, and opening night will probably feel like the finals after last night. But
this is in Washington.
This is in DC, yeah. And I was hanging out, and the one thing I realized being around the Heat is that like Udonis Haslem has got to be one of the coolest humans in the NBA. And like, I know the Heat lost Wade, but like I put Udonis Haslem right there with Wade in terms of just like a king of Miami, because if like, have you thought about his history and just like he's got one of the coolest stories in the league.
Yeah, no, they used to call him the Ultimate Warrior during the LeBron era. You know, he was the guy who was the unsung hero who didn't get the credit on the title team. He brought the moxie.
He was the enforcer. And he's from Miami. He was kind of like a less obnoxious, much tougher version of Draymond Green, and like was on the Shaq.
Shots fired.
That's my exact take, is that Udonis Haslem is much cooler than Draymond Green. Is like he was on the Shaq title teams. He played with Alonzo Mourning. He never should have been in the league. Like he was kind of a big boned sort of, I don't want to say fat, but like you watched him at Florida, you did not think NBA player. And now he's like 15 years in, playing in his hometown, like several titles. Udonis Haslem is dope.
So do you have any idea what he might do after his career? It seems like he's just going to be like their vice president of basketball operations.
Oh, yeah.
And he's
yeah.
just going to work for them
dude,
for like the next
the
like 30 years.
Yeah. He's definitely like a mafia member for life at this point.
There you go.
Give me your second.
I'm a little concerned about the Thunder already. Like, I'm not saying a lottery necessarily, but they gave up like 265 points to Real Madrid in a game. Like, that doesn't seem good, even in a preseason game. Steven Adams goes down with the ankle injury. Obviously, that's not the end of the world, but it is a reminder that they're not super deep at this point. They don't have that A-list talent to kind of cover up for these short absences.
Yeah.
I mean, Adams to them is just a completely indispensable max type player at this point. I mean, he's really, you know, changed within their framework. And then this Cameron Payne injury news is a real bummer too. I mean, that's a guy who they needed to play and get minutes from and contributions from, and now he's going to be out for a while.
All right. So wait, what happened to him? What happened to Payne?
He's got like an injured foot. It sounds like he's not going to have surgery, but he's going to miss some time. So I think he's just going to be another roster holder trying to cover up from.
That's
not
ideal.
There already was depth concerns. Not ideal at all.
He's also one of the only guys who can actually shoot. So that like they need guys on the perimeter who can score.
It's like the video game is just cranking up the difficulty level on Russell Westbrook to just completely, you know, mess with his mind.
Yeah, we've been over this before, but I feel like you could make some good money shorting Thunder stock right now.
There you go. And I mean, and like this is kind of the issue, right? We already had concerns about their depth and their overall talent. We had concerns about, you know, is Westbrook going to be in a position where he's trying to do too much? And can they stop anybody defensively? And already, I think we're seeing all these problems kind of come to fruition. And yes, I know it's October 5th, so it's kind of silly to be saying that, but these are legit issues that were going to be there, and they're kind of, you know, being proven, you know, right off the bat. I mean,
yeah.
What happens if Steven Adams misses a week during the regular season? What's their game plan? Like, who's going to step in and play those minutes? They don't have one, you know?
Steven Adams is indestructible, so I don't even know what you're talking about. Although I will say that I'm stuck on the Embiid box score from last night, and in the upper left hand corner, OKC is currently losing to FC Barcelona.
Perfect.
That's not terribly encouraging. But I also refuse to read anything into preseason basketball. I think that's a solid policy for both of us. So I'm just gonna protect you here and tell you not to worry about Real Madrid or FC Barcelona. Do you have a final take from basketball that we haven't even really been watching?
Yeah, no, I am legitimately concerned about the Thunder. Like, they might not make the playoffs in the Spanish second division at this rate. Like, they're in the Western Conference. Like, they don't have a real margin for error. I'm not saying like completely panic. You know, this is not like a, you know,
look, these are hot takes. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah. All right,
dude, don't defend yourself. We're good.
All right, here comes the last one. The Knicks season's already over.
I support that. Yeah.
Okay, we can move on.
I'm completely out. I'm completely out on it. There have been a lot of people. I've heard like at least 10 people say, you know, nobody's talking about the Knicks, but the Knicks could be pretty good. And like, I just don't see it, man. I mean, the row stuff is all pretty awful, and like that's clouding the year a little bit. But I also like Rowe's the basketball player, and the whole mix is just kind of a bad idea. And
yeah, I was gonna say, you know, you've got judges, bailiffs, and legal analysts across the country talking about the Knicks.
Yeah, like I don't know, I'm out on the Knicks, and they're just depressing to even think about, and which is also depressing because Porzingis should be a lot of fun, and yet we're stuck for at least another year. But, you know, who knows? Maybe this will be healthy. They'll bottom out and get guys out of there and pair Porzingis with another lottery pick next year, and we can go from there. My final take is related to
that. I have one more question. Real quick, one question. And maybe this will be maybe I'll guess your take. By Christmas, is Phil Jackson on the hot seat?
No, I don't think Phil Jackson is ever, like, I think it's reverse. Like, I think Phil's had a foot out the door for, like, 2.5 years.
So he's going to just retire, resign?
Well, I don't know. I think he's, I mean, I don't, I'm not convinced that he ever, his heart ever really left the Lakers and Genie. Like, I think there's a scenario where like Genie pulls a power move on Jim Buss and then, and Phil is there in like 36 hours to take over the team. So, I mean, and that's not even like a conspiracy theory because people have been saying that since the minute he took over in New York. So I like, and that's how I see this playing out.
Well, that's pretty hot, but I'm with it. Okay, what's your last hot take?
James Harden, related to that Knicks game, by the way, I think James Harden is going to have, like, we've talked a lot about the numbers that Russ is going to put up this year, but James Harden is going to have the most ridiculous numbers in the league. Playing in D'Antoni's offense, I think he's going to average, like, 33-10 for the Rockets, and the Rockets are going to make the playoffs, and Harden will be, like, top three MVP voting.
I mean, if you wanted to like construct an interview that would get the home team's fans the most possibly excited that you could ever do during the preseason, it would be the interview he did with Woj. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't see it. Hit, what did he say?
He hit every chord perfectly. He talked about embracing all the responsibilities of a franchise player. He talked about understanding, you know, what his burden was going to be on offense and how he had to kind of improve chemistry with his teammates. He talked about doing the preseason workouts so they could build some cohesion together before the season started. He talked about going into D'Antoni's office and picking his brain because he knew that that relationship was going to be really important. I mean, it was like absolutely perfect. Like, I think we should give we should probably chip and have a Kickstarter and offer a bonus for Harden's PR people because they did unbelievable work.
I don't know, maybe it's real. Maybe it's real.
Did he grow up? It's
just that liberating to not be around Dwight Howard every day. And this is like a whole new lease on life for James Harden.
And I'm being half sarcastic, but it was great to hear Harden. It seemed like something clicked, you know, and of course he got the big contract, right? So he's probably feeling the pressure this summer in terms of if you get that big extension, they give you all of their cap space that they had remaining. It's pretty much, you know, your show. But he did a nice job of pointing out, you know, his strengths over these last couple of seasons. Yes, he's been kind of derided for his defense, but he's played huge minutes. He's been very durable. He's been out there every single night. He's put up the stats like you're mentioning, and there's no doubt it's going to go to a different level this year. They're just going to need that from him. And, you know, stylistically, just having an entire team that doesn't play defense is an interesting gambit. You know, it's probably not going
to. I'm all for it, man.
It's probably not going to work like as well as you would hope, but I think, you know, given their personnel, why not? I mean, it's kind of the crazy experiment, and they're going to be able to blow a lot of teams off the court this season, especially if they can stay healthy. They can keep those, you know, former Pelican guys on the court.
I think they're legitimately going to average like 125 points a game.
See, and that's awesome because there's some teams out there that just aren't going to be able to compete with that no matter what. And there's going to be just a certain number of wins baked in, just based off of that philosophy. So more power to him. And, you know, if James Harden really has turned the corner, he's improved his focus. That's one of the best things that possibly could happen for the NBA.
I'm telling you, he's a whole new man not having to deal with Dwight Howard every day. I'm crediting the Dwight exit to all of this.
Yeah, addition by subtraction. I mean, that does happen.
It's great.
Hasn't quite worked out for the Lakers yet, but they're still trying.
Yeah, well, Harden has my 3 days into preseason. 3 days into preseason, Harden has my MVP vote. I would also like to say that the Thunder are now beating FC Barcelona, so that allays your concerns a little
bit. Against the Spanish league, thank God.
So we will be back next week with extensive. We're not sure exactly how we're going to preview everything, but we'll have a couple podcasts previewing the season to come, the year to come, and we'll both be in New York, which is great for some meetings. So we'll do it in person. And I don't know, any final preseason thoughts?
No, I'm pretty much ready to get this going. But everybody should definitely get excited about the NBA preview issue. We're going to have lots of good information in there. The scouting reports that Andrew was talking about earlier, team by team rankings and breakdowns. We're going to have, I believe a few other features in there in terms of like the most exciting teams to watch, and annual rankings there.
It's certainly been fun putting everything together.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a huge, endeavor. You know, it takes weeks out of our lives every year, but look out for the preview issue. It'll be awesome this year. And that's the end of my plug.
All right, good. Good plug. Also, additional plug. If you like this podcast, please review it. Give us some stars, some reviews, whatever. Offer your thoughts on Stonehenge. And with that in mind...
Yeah. We want your theories. We want the best 5 Stonehenge theories. Please.
Exactly. All right. We'll be back next week.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.